Yeah. Hey, good evening, everybody. Make yourself comfortable. So this is our fifth shiur on this series of your jobs and your halacha. Everybody can feel free to volunteer, to step up in their particular profession. We're looking for volunteers. You may be volunteered if you don't volunteer.
Voluntold.
which was like kind of the case in this situation. So today we have Shlomo. Shlomo has graciously agreed to be interviewed, so to speak, and he had a number of fascinating questions, which were both relevant when he was previously a funeral director, and now as well. What's your current position called?
They call it a cemetery counselor, which is essentially like a sales rep at a cemetery.
Okay, so it's a related topics.
A glorified sales rep.
So I was going to say this is relevant to everybody. It most certainly is relevant to everybody. But it's relevant to everybody in more ways than you realize. And that's what we'll be discussing today. It's actually fascinating. And it's fascinating to understand various different aspects of halacha that I myself wasn't so familiar with. And when you look into it, it's really very interesting. So let's jump right into it. So the first question, Shlomo, go ahead.
So the first question that I needed to really address when, as I was even going in my schooling was the problem of embalming. I knew that there was going to be embalming bodies was going to be required in the schooling, not necessarily once I was a funeral director because I wasn't really focusing on the non-Jewish aspect, but that was something that I was going to have to do, and I needed to know, was that mutter? And if it was mutter in some scenarios, you know, maybe non-Jewish bodies, what about Jewish bodies, etc.? What happens if I don't know, you know, the body is lying in front of me? I don't know if the last name is Herskovitz or Smith. So what do I do?
Right. So let me clarify before we begin. As one thing is that Jewish law halacha has very specific guidelines about what you can or can't do with a mace, a dead body, but what is a Jewish sensitivity and what the Torah requires is not at all what is in the world generally considered proper treatment or sensitivity in regarding a dead body. Meaning, on the contrary, one would consider in the secular world the following the will of the person who passed away to be the most sacred thing to do in terms of honoring the dead person. And in halacha, as we'll see, we actually will go directly against the will and testament of the dead of the person who passed away if it goes against halacha, because you don't have a choice about how or what process should be used with burial. The Torah dictates that. So it shouldn't be construed as saying, well, for a Jewish body we do this, but for a non-Jewish body we do that. It's no disrespect. Actually, on the contrary, for the non-Jews, it would be disrespectful not to listen to them. So therefore it becomes a very interesting halacha question. Is there any problem from a Jewish perspective to do what the non-Jewish family wants and what the person himself probably wanted? In terms of cremation or other different processes that are done, is that okay to do as a Jew? So that's just as an introduction. Now, can you clarify, maybe not in too much detail, what exactly is the embalming process?
Yeah, it's not like it was in ancient Egypt.
Okay, that's important to know, actually. Go ahead. No, that's actually very relevant, so go ahead. Clarify.
So the
the embalming uses the vascular system of the body, because the vascular system is a closed system which goes in throughout the entire body. So the arteries and veins are all closed systems. So basically, we make an incision and then we open up an artery and inject embalming fluid into the artery. And then there's also a vein that's opened. It's usually the carotid and the jugular in the neck. And then through the jugular vein, the blood is essentially drained out as the embalming fluid is pumped in.
What do they do with the blood? Dispose of it?
Yeah, it goes right down the drain. that is the, I would say, 90% of embalming, and then there's all, you know, cavity fluid as well. That's, you know, that's not vascular. That's just injected right into the cavity.
Okay, so basically, it's a process. What?
The point is to what? Preserve the body.
Preserve the body. It's a lot of non-Jewish funerals have open caskets, so that allows the body to be unburied for a lot longer.
It doesn't decay.
It takes a lot longer. Yeah, it retards the decomposition process.
Okay, so you're draining the blood, which obviously is going to be a halachic question of, you know, that itself is some level of nivul hames. Nivul hames and bizayin hames, it's all kind of the same thing. It's something disrespectful. Again, as far as halacha is concerned, that may be considered disrespectful. Did they do it differently, actually, in ancient Egypt? And that'll be relevant. We'll speak to,
yeah, well,
to
it
in a minute.
Yes, they did. They, not the, I don't know. I had to take it. It was part of a, there was a history of an embalming course, and they touched on it very, you know, briefly.
Right.
Basically, they did not do anything vascularly.
They did not drain the blood.
No, they removed certain organs and put them in jars, and they basically soaked the body in some fluid for a long time. They basically pickled the body.
I got it. Okay. See, the reason why that's relevant is because, as we know, Yosef did embalm Yaakov Avinu, right? So clearly, it doesn't seem that there would have been something disrespectful, according to the Torah, if Yosef did it. Now, the Gemara does say that Yosef was punished for embalming Yaakov Avinu, and therefore he died before all his brothers because he did that. But it's not clear if that's because there's something wrong with embalming or it was just without permission from his father. And obviously, through embalming, again, he delayed the process. But again, remember, in those days, Yaakov Avinu wanted to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, and it was quite a trip from Egypt, long enough that the body, in normal circumstances, would have started decaying. So it seemed as if there wasn't much of an option to do otherwise. In other words, he had to embalm the body for it to survive the trip. Otherwise, the only other option would have been to bury Yaakov in Egypt and then disinter him after it decayed, and which presumably, according to other Gemaras, would never happen because Yaakov didn't even die, according to other Gemaras. Or even if we're to say that that's not to be taken literally and he did die, but there are, again, other Gemaras that say that all the Avos who are in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah are fully, they never decayed, their body never decayed, which is something that's been testified about a number of tzaddikim, that even when they disinter them, their body was full and not decayed or degraded at all. So, in any case, if you were working with the Derech HaTeva, with the natural state of things, it makes sense that Yosef made that choice. But it is discussed. I found that discussed in the Paiskim, the fact that Yosef did it. But I think that you're right, that the way we do it today, by removing the blood, would definitely create a much bigger question of design and mace. You most certainly would have to save the blood in terms of, again, a yid. I'm talking about a yid for a minute, not even a non-Jew, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I don't think the Egyptians were trying to preserve the blood. I think that there was a lot of blood loss in the process.
They
removed a lot of organs.
Right.
Yeah.
I wonder if they did that with Yaakov Avinu's time. That would be hard to remain. He was Yaakov Avinu Lemes if he removed his organs. Yeah, I don't know how that would have happened. But okay, anyway. So regardless, now the crux of this question is going to also be relevant for another couple of questions here. And this is what we're going to mainly talk about today is, what exactly is the obligation and the isser of doing something disrespectful to a dead body? And does that apply to a non-Jew? And the bigger question is, do Jews have a chiyuv, an obligation of kvura, of burying, of non-Jews? Again, the same thing is like, if a non-Jew chooses to not be buried, he wants to be put in a shelf, in a mausoleum. So a Jew would make a request like that, we would deny his request, we wouldn't fill it. But can we fill such a request of a non-Jew, as far as we're concerned, at least, right? These are the questions we're going to have to get to the bottom of, which is a fascinating, when you start seeing what goes on in the Gemara, it's going to be interesting. But let's go to the next question. Go ahead.
So, in a similar vein,
thank you, Ari, for pointing that out. Yeah, go ahead.
Good call. Yeah. I wish I intended the pun.
Yeah.
When families want to see a mace, which is oftentimes the case, especially in non-from circles, you know, people want to see the mace. We don't. We don't want to, you know, see the mace, but a lot of families do. can a suture be used to close the mouth? That would be the way that you would close the mouth. There's a suture that's made inside the mouth and then tightened. And if done properly, the onlooker would not be able to see the string. And that's otherwise the mouth sometimes falls open. It's very unsightly, and that's the practice done.
Right. So this is interesting because it's actually a halacha that in part of the Jewish preparation for burial, you need to close the mouth. And it's talked about even on Shabbos, if someone passes away on Shabbos and his mouth is open. So it's so considered so disrespectful that you're allowed to close the mouth on Shabbos, even though that's muktzah, right? You're not supposed to touch a dead body on Shabbos. It's a heter just for the covet of the mace, for the respect of the mace. You're allowed to tie it, kosher. It doesn't talk about sewing it. It says you're allowed to. But you see that it's a big deal. It's a real consideration. But the thing here is that you're going to stitch. So when you're making a stitch, means you're making a hole. And that goes back to that question, is making a hole going to be a problem of nivul hamace? So I think in practice they say not to do it. That's what I've heard from Rabbi Zohn, I'm pretty sure. But I was thinking about it, and it's not so simple, because let's say I've had this, unfortunately, a couple of times. If someone passes away in the midst of a surgery, so he's all open, right? So you have to close him up. There's no question. Halachically, you have to. Even if it's from doctor and it's on Shabbos, Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes that you have to close the mace up. You can't leave the mace, the dead body like that. So on Shabbos, I think he says, actually, you should try to find different ways to just keep it until Matzah Shabbos and then sew it up. But that's a universal practice. Nobody leaves the body like that. So because that's a tremendous bizayin hamace to leave it open. So then the question is that, so if you see that we do allow sewing for the sake of respect of the body, so then it's a lot more respectful to suture it than to tie it. I know I've done the tying. It's not, doesn't look as good. The mouth doesn't really close well when you do it, and it looks weird, because a rope around the head. So it's not respectful. So I would want to. I haven't researched it more. I would want to speak to Rabbi Zohn about this one. Rabbi Zohn is the premier expert on all these halachas in the States, basically. All roads lead to him. So I'm curious what he would say.
I did speak to him once. He did mention that if someone is autopsied, that we would do the sutures in order to enable tahara. Mm-hmm. In other words, it sounded as if like the reason you do the suture would be to enable the tahara. I don't know if that was when he said it was davka or
just the tahara. I understood it's much more than that. It's like you can't leave a dead body in that condition. Okay, let's go to number three.
The next question is the question about cremation. If you have a family who wants to have cremation as a funeral director and also as a cemetery professional, this comes up as well. What am I allowed to do and what am I not allowed to do in terms of selling services or carrying out those services? So there's a few things. First of all, if I'm sitting with a family that wants a loved one to be cremated, or someone who's already deceased to be cremated, I have to have paperwork filled out in order to allow the cremation to happen. So can I present them with the paperwork, or is that like a lifnei iver shaila? And then
that's if they're Jewish, you're assuming.
If they're Jewish, right.
Right. We'll talk about non-Jewish as well. It's not so simple, actually. Go ahead.
Interesting. And then the second part is, which I never dealt with, but in theory, a cremation operating the crematory, the retort, which is the thing that the body's placed into. Are you allowed to turn it on? That would be the other question. Can you actually perform the cremation?
That's both a question for a Jew and a non-Jew as well. Same level of question.
So, and then from the cemetery side of it, people oftentimes want to inter cremated remains, both in pre-planning as well as at present need planning as well. So can I sell a plot or a columbarium, which is like a mausoleum for cremated remains?
People actually bury?
They do. Yeah, they do. They
bury scatter them. Notion.
They do that too. They don't come to me though.
Yeah. You wonder why someone would actually pay for that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
They want to have a place they can visit.
Yeah. Yeah, and strangely, they even want to be buried because it's the Jewish thing to do.
Really?
You get that too sometimes.
That's interesting. It's not so far off, actually.
It's a little bizarre that they want to do that part, but not the burial part.
Right. So it's interesting. We'll talk about this. We'll actually hopefully get to. What's interesting is that what do they need you for other than to? Do you actually have to sign off on it for it to happen? Can it happen without you? Without a funeral director?
Well, you need to have a funeral. You need to have a licensed funeral director to make arrangements.
So it won't. It can't happen without you.
It cannot happen without a funeral director present.
So the thing is like this. The thing. What's interesting, which we'll get to, is even when I'm talking about a yid, the fact is this person's not getting buried, right? Because they're not buying him a plot. So they're not burying him. So now, so the question is, maybe we need to look at this differently. If the question is, should we bury him or should we cremate him? Okay, so that's lifnei iver. You're cremating him and you're not burying him. But that's a done deal. It's before you get there. They're not burying him. They're not buying him a plot. If you don't deal with them, so they're just not going to bury him, and deal try to find another way. But the burying is not happening. So once burying is not happening, then we'll have to learn if perhaps cremation is actually a kindness, than to rather leave the body unburied. Now, if that's the only choice, the body's not getting buried, so then it's possible that cremating is actually the right thing to do.
Wow.
Where do they so leave we'll see. It if it's unburied?
Well, they leave it in a freezer until they figure out something, right?
By Shulchan Aruch,
you say.
That's what we would learn.
We'll see. We'll see when the sources. No, I mean, let's say, you know, people want to bury in where the soldiers are buried. What's that called again?
Over
here? What? Or here?
Arlington,
right? So I think there's like a backup of a year or something, maybe even more. It's a long backup. They just keep the body in a freezer, right? So the body remains unburied. That would be a tremendous cruelty in terms of for a Jewish body, right? I mean, if we would, anybody would want to do that, I don't know if they would get a heter, but they would have to bury it and disinter it and whatever. And you know, most people don't want to do that. It costs a lot of money, and it's then they can't have the body lying in state, you know, whatever. So it's possibly viewed as a kindness, but we'll have to get to that. Let's go to the next question. It's an interesting one. You can choose to ask that or not if you want.
Yeah. So it was a Meister Shaya. There was an Israeli non-Frum family that came, and they wanted to bury the man died. The wife was still alive. They wanted to both be buried in Israel, but for the time being, while she was still alive, she wanted to be able to visit him. So she wanted to bury him at the cemetery, and then when she goes, that they would disinter his remains, and then they'd both be sent to Israel for final kavura. Now, one practical way to do it, which I just opted not to offer them because they weren't really looking for it, was to sell them a mausoleum space. That way, it's above ground. It's like just placing the casket on the shelf. So once the time comes, we can take the casket out, and then that's a lot easier than redigging the grave. My boss was a little bit upset that I didn't offer them that, because that would have made more practical sense for the cemetery. But we're a Jewish cemetery. We offer Jewish. The goal is to be Jewish. That is the goal. You know, we offer other things to accommodate people that want to do different things. But we are, the goal is to be Jewish. They didn't look. They weren't looking or asking for something that wasn't Jewish, and I wasn't hiding it from them. I just didn't present it to them. So I'm not going to start showing them all the usher ways to do things if they're not asking for them in the first place.
Is it sort of buried in a mausoleum?
It's not burying. So yeah, it's interesting. See, that's well. So that's, it's just an interesting part of this question.
It's like more like a shave valtasa. You're not. I mean, you're just putting them on a shelf.
So you're not burying them. You're not burying them. So it could get back into that thing. But really, the interesting twist about this question is the fact that you have a job, and essentially you're supposed to keep both people's interests in mind, both the people who are buying the plot from you and your boss. So there is a good question there. But putting that aside for a minute. We have whole Gemaras and Mishnayos about a concept of kuchim. Kuchim were these underground caves, kind of, where they would dig into the walls. They would make a chamber, and then they would make shelves in the wall, and they would just place the dead person in the shelf in the wall, in a casket, and that's it. They wouldn't stuff it with earth. It even talks about that there's space and how much space. So it would seem that is a an accepted form of burial for a Jew, but
it's the big cock and armulis.
What, they do this?
It's the big machlokes in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, I didn't know that. This is a,
yeah.
Oh, so they want to start doing that. So that was the idea. That's why they did it in those days. That's clearly why they did it in those days. They could. If you see the way the Gemara and Bava Basra, one day you get there in I don't know, next year sometime. Yeah. No, it's going to take a little while to get there. It's towards the end of Bava Basra. Yeah, they really squeezed in a lot. They squeezed in a lot of people in the little amount of space. And then they could also do different levels, heights, you know, so there was a lot of utilization of space. But it could be that's underground. So it was considered as burial, even though it was not putting earth on the dead body, but it still had a quality of burial. I don't know. That is the interesting part of this question in terms of your profession. In terms of the other part of the question, which is the Choshev Mishpat question, that's a good question for every profession. Whenever this comes up, if you are faced with a situation where it's not in the best interest of your boss, but it's in your best interest Jewishly, can you just manipulate the situation in a way, like, for example, you know, there's supposed to be a meeting, and it would be in the best interest of your boss if it would happen on Shabbos or Yontif. But it's not in your best interest for it to happen on Shabbos and Yontif. So can you just schedule it the way you want it to be, even though it's inconvenient, not just inconvenient, maybe even he'll lose, you know, because it gets delayed. These are good questions where not that you're going to work on Shabbos and Yontif, but you would have to disclose that. You know, you would have to tell him, listen, I'm doing this, even though it's not the best for you, you have to get his permission for that, and that can be highly uncomfortable. So that's a great question, which is not about the funeral directors in particular. So
the other point, though, I don't know if this makes too much of a difference, but there's also a concern, what if they don't ever do, what if they just change their mind in the future? What if they don't get around to burying in Israel? That could also happen. So right. He's sitting on a shelf in a mausoleum
forever.
Indefinitely. Yeah. You know, right. It's expensive. You know, maybe they don't have the money. Maybe they're pushing it off, and then it just becomes forgotten about.
Right. Okay. So we have really another four questions that we can discuss. But being that the majority of what we'll talk about over here is these questions, so I'm going to start. Let's just start with dealing with these questions, and then if we have time, we'll come back to the other ones. So these questions, as we said, there's really questions of how to understand what the obligation from the Torah is. What is our obligation to do with dead people, Jewish, non-Jewish, and what is the isser exactly of disrespecting a dead body, and what exactly are the rules? So let's begin with a Gemara in Sanhedrin that actually we're beginning in the middle of that Gemara. The beginning of the Gemara first actually wants to know, what's the source that there is an obligation to bury? Who says that the Torah obligates you to bury? So the Gemara has a back and forth about that. It's not so simple that it's something that the Torah requires, even though burial is mentioned numerous times in the Torah, right? We just had it in Parashas Vayechi. It's Hashem buried Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara quotes all those. The Gemara says maybe that's just because that's what was done, but that doesn't mean you have to do it. So it's pretty funny, you know? Like Hashem does something, and we say, oh, yeah, you know, Hashem was just doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. But you don't have to do that. Yeah, literally. It's kind of a funny Gemara. Well,
what is the other option?
It's the Rabbanan. It's certainly an obligation.
What should you do with the body?
Are
there still
the
Isur not doing stuff?
Oh, if the Torah doesn't require burial, you could just leave it. I don't know. Nothing. Okay, so let's see the Gemara after that, though. So the Gemara is in Sanhedrin of Mevom and Beis. It's the first source here. The Gemara says, Yibaylahu. So Gemara has now a question. Kavura Mishum Bizyainahu, what is actually the reason why we bury? Is it because Bizyaina, not burying, is disrespectful? We'll see, disrespectful to who? Oy Mishum Kaparahu, or is it that we want the dead person to get atonement, and being in the earth it actually atones for the dead person for his averas, for his sins? Lamainaf Kumina, what's the difference if it's for this reason or that reason? What happens if a person says, I don't want to be buried, lahu garva, don't bury me? He makes that his will. Do not bury me. If the problem is that it's disrespectful, then it's not up to him. We're not going to listen to him. But if you say it's because of the sake of getting atonement, what if he says, listen, I don't want any atonement. I'm willing to burn for my sins or whatever, or I'm a big tzaddik and I'm not going to. So what is the halacha? Now Rashi explains, what is this bizayin that we're talking about, this disrespect? So Rashi says, it'll be very embarrassing in everybody's view. Sheyiruhu mace, they'll see him dead, v'nirka v'nivka, and his body will start to decompose in front of everybody. That is extremely disrespectful to the dead person. There's the reason kihechet havle kapara batmana shmidu mashpilonais patatias. I'm going fast. So Rashi says lav kol kamina. If it's because of bizayin, why is he not up to him. So Rashi is a very interesting thing. The bizayinu l'kroivav, because it's not that it's disrespectful to the dead person himself. He would be able to say, I don't care. But it's disrespectful to his family. It's a huge embarrassment and humiliation for his family that their father or relative is sitting there and decomposing and nothing's being done to him. And he does not have the right to bring that kind of embarrassment upon his family.
If he doesn't have the immediate family, then he would be, then he might.
So the Ramban points this out. So the Ramban in Teres Adam, so the Ramban wrote a sefer dedicated to things that revolve around death. It's called Teres Adam. It's not a sefer on Sanhedrin. This is a standalone sefer. So he quotes this Gemara. He says, is it because of embarrassment or because of atonement? V'layev shita, and the Gemara does not actually come to a conclusion. The Gemara remains a suffix. Therefore, you have to bury him. The suffix yisuruhu, it's a suffix of an avera. Now he says, what if the whole family is also cool with the fact that he shouldn't be buried, which is actually, right, the case today. If someone is not religious and they all want, dad didn't want to be buried, wants to be put in a mausoleum. So everybody's okay with it. Maitzin mehem bal karchan. You force them, not only do you force them to pay for it. You make them pay for it, you take their money to pay for it. Or if you have someone that passed away and he doesn't have anybody to bury him or he doesn't have any family, and he says, don't bury me, ain't shaymin la, you don't listen to why. It's embarrassing for the whole world that there should be a human. I mean, we saw that, you know, unfortunately now in October 7th when they degraded and disrespected the dead bodies. It shook the whole world up. It's not a bazillion to a dead body is something that affects everybody. It's an interesting thing. And it's not simply because of the family. That's what Ramban says. So now this Ramban is very relevant because if the Isser of not burying someone, if the reason why the Gemara remains that is prohibited to listen is because it's going to be a bazillion for the whole world, so then it shouldn't make a difference if it's Jewish or not Jewish. Right? What's the difference? That's the same. Everybody's human. It's going to be the same level of disrespect. And that's what I saw a number of Achrayim want to deduce from the Ramban, that he would hold that it should be this Isser of not burying, or Bizayin Hameis, shouldn't be limited to Jews. Now, we'll see that there's more to it than that. Now, let's skip Eis Gimel for a minute. We'll come back to that in a minute.
Look, on the flip side of this, that means if the body's not actually degrading, like a viewing, for example.
Right.
So what's the problem?
Or if it's being frozen. Right. So you don't have this whole, you shouldn't.
Here in this case, it's the viewing, where they make it look nice for a
and
day.
And they embalm it.
Before,
right.
Before it, even without embalming, it's before it decomposes. You do it right away, a nice viewing, whatever.
Yeah.
So on
the contrary, right, it's considered now the more respectful.
More right.
It's more respectful for the person. That's a very valid point. Okay, so let's hold on to that thought for a minute. Take a look at the Rambam now. The Rambam doesn't ask a question, but the way he quotes this Gemara is essentially a question on the Gemara. So Aizdal, the Rambam is in Hilchos Avel. He says, Ablam Tzivush LaYikaver, if he commanded that he shouldn't be buried, Ein Shemin La, you don't listen to him. You know why? Very simple reason, Shekvur Mitzvah, because the Mitzvah to bury him. It's not a choice. You can't say, oh, don't bury me. The Torah commands to bury Shenemar Kikavar Tikbarenu, because you have to bury him. Now, the Lacha Mishnah, we're not going to read it inside, but the Lacha Mishnah asks that, that's very nice. But the Gemara doesn't say that, right? The Gemara gives you two choices why you have to bury, either because of Kapara, atonement, or because of Bizayin. And the Gemara says that, therefore, it may be a person could say, don't bury me. And here the Rambam's coming with a third reason, which we would say out of left field, say, whoa, what about the mitzvah to bury? Well, the Gemara didn't seem to think about that. The Gemara didn't seem to be considering that. So how could you go and say that you have to bury because of the mitzvah if the Gemara, wasn't even one of the two possibilities of the Gemara? So the Lech Mishnah says that the Gemara is working with the assumption that you're not obligated to bury min ha-Torah. The Torah doesn't obligate you to bury, and that's why it more wants to know what the Chazal have in mind. But the Rambam paskins that you are obligated to bury min ha-Torah, which it comes from a different place, different source, this pasuk. So once you're obligated to bury min ha-Torah, then the Gemara's whole question is moot. That's moot. You have to bury. Okay? So
and
now...
there's a mitzvah. Isn't that... That's predicated on the fact that Kohen Mitabe and Beis Mitzvah, everyone's mechuyev, isn't that
right.
Predicated on there's a...
some kind of mitzvah of Kavura. Right, that's a good question. That's a question on the Gemara. You'll have to see that. The Gemara, I think, brings that up.
How does the Rabban learn that it's not a Mitzvah to bury him? The Pasuk says,
so the Gemara actually brings this Pasuk. The Gemara does bring this Pasuk. The Gemara doesn't find it to be a proof. The Gemara says that's the minig, and that's why you have to do it. Really, what is that Pasuk talking about? Let's get to that Pasuk, actually. That Pasuk is the Pasuk that talks about if someone committed a crime that you get skila for. So, Beis Din executes him, and then you hang the body up for a day, right? You have the display the body so that everybody should see what happened. And the halal, then this pasuk says you are not allowed to let the body hang there till the night. Lesalonus and blas ala eitz. So loisa say, ki kavra sik beren. That's the end of the pasuk. So the real say and loisa say is not to let the body hang. That's the loisa say lesalon, and the mitzvah say ki kavra sik berenu. That's what the actual mitzvah is, and the Rambam's understanding that this is the source that there's a mitzvah to bury min haTorah. The Gemara says that it's not a proof, whatever reason. Now, take a look at the Ramban on that pasuk, and this is where it gets to directly. He discusses non-Jews.
Does the Rambam learn the Gemara differently?
No, according to the Lach Mishnah, he doesn't learn the Gemara differently. He just says that the Gemara is irrelevant because the Gemara was working with the assumption that there's no obligation to bury min haTorah. But we hold like a different Gemara that says there is an obligation to bury min haTorah, so the whole thing is moot.
And we know that other Gemara is saying.
Yes. The Lach Mishnah quotes the sources. That's the.
So that would mean what? The Machlokas.
So the whole thing is moot. It's not relevant. Why this Bizayin, this whole thing is not relevant. It's a chiv, it's a mitzvah anyway. So now take a look at this Ramban al haTorah. He quotes actually a story in Tanakh. So the Pasuk says, Lesalon of Lasa al Eitz, you can't let his dead body hang on the wood, ki kavra sik berenu b'yamahu, you have to bury him that day. Ki kilas alekim talui, because leaving him hanging would be cursing Hashem. V'leisetamus ad mascha, and don't allow tuma to exist in your land. Ash Hashem l'kach anos l'chanach, that Hashem gave you to inherit. Now Rashi says, what does it mean, kilas alekim talui? Why would leaving his body out be cursing Hashem? So Rashi says, "Zulzula shel malachu." This is humiliating the king. Sha'adam asi b'dmus jachna, because a human is made in the form of Hashem. Yisrael banav heim. Now here Rashi stresses Yisrael, right? And Jews are the sons of God. Mashal shnei achim shaydem lamzel zeh, and he gives a mashal to two brothers who were similar to each other. Echad nasa melech, one became king. Echad nitfus alistis, and the other one was as different as possible, and he became a chief robber of Anitla, and eventually he got caught and he was hung. Kol haraya, and anybody who saw him hanging, Imra Hamelech Tali, they said, oh, the king is hanging, because he looked just like his brother the king. So this was very embarrassing for the king, so they made sure to take him down. So that's the concept here, that a person is like Hashem, looks like Hashem, so to speak, or presents Hashem, so he can't let his body hang. It's a bizayin, it's an embarrassment to Hashem. Now the Ramban says, very different than Rashi, the Ramban says, "Umin halav azeh, because of this lav of Leisalin, kavar Yehoshua malchei Knan b'yayman." We find in Sefer Yehoshua that Yehoshua waged war against the various different kings that lived in Eretz Yisrael, and he killed Zevach and Salmunna, a few different kings, and it says he buried them the day they were killed. He buried them the day they were killed. The Pasuk makes a point out of it. Why, the Ramban says? Because of this Pasuk, even though it was non-Jews. But even though letting them hang would not have had the same problem, there was either a concern that they will cause tuma to be in Eretz Yisrael because a dead body creates tuma. Oi, he says, he was concerned about this concept of kilas alekim, that a human represents HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and like the mashal that Rashi gave of two brothers, meaning the Ramban is saying that problem of humiliation to Hashem is not limited to Jews the way Rashi said. It's non-Jews as well. It's a human, and a human is bedmus Hashem, and a human is in the form of Hashem, and therefore that's why Yehoshua buried Malchut Knan. So the Ramban here in Al HaTorah is making it very clear, you have to bury a non-Jew. There's a chiyuv to bury a non-Jew, and that's why equal to Jews, it seems, and that's why the Yehoshua buried these two kings of Knan. Now, let's go now back to the Gemara, Ais Gimel. This is the biggest problem. The Gemara says, basically the opposite. So, Mar Gittin, Daf Samach Halaf says, Tan Rabbanan, Mefarnesin, Aniye Goyim, and Aniye Yisrael, when you disperse tzedakah, you give out charity to the poor people, you give out to Jews and non-Jews alike. If you're going to the hospital to visit sick people, you visit Jews and non-Jews alike. And when you're doing a burial, it seems like a kind of a mass burial, you bury Jews and non-Jews alike. Why? Because if you're going to distinguish to discriminate, thank you, between Jews and non-Jews, that will reflect very badly upon us, and it will be a chilul Hashem. So therefore, you don't do that. You do all kindnesses that Jews do, we do Jews to non-Jews equally, so as not to discriminate. Now, what the implication is that the Torah doesn't obligate it. Right, very clearly. It's Eva, right? The Torah doesn't obligate it. The Torah only obligates you to do the kindness to other Jews. The Torah obligates you to do Bikur Cholim, to bury other Jews. But once we're doing it, we can't discriminate because that will cause hatred and it'll be disrespectful. So therefore, we do both as Dar Kishal. But very clearly, the obligation is not there. Right? So this is a very clearly against what the Ramban is saying, that there is a Chiyuv to bury a non-Jew equally to a Jew. So, in order to answer this question, some Achrayim want to say that perhaps what happened over there was that Yeshua, he actively disrespected the bodies of these dead people because he hung them up. He had them displayed. So when you do something to actively disrespect, so then it kicks in an obligation. You can't do that. That's kilos alakim talay. You can't disrespect the dead body of a non-Jew. You don't have the obligation to go out and make sure that all non-Jews are buried. You have an obligation to do that for Jews. Once you're doing it for Jews, you should do it for non-Jews as well. But the obligation to go out and see to it that everybody's buried, that's an obligation like other kindnesses to Jews. Once you do it for Jews, do it for non-Jews as well. But if you're disrespecting a non-Jewish body, that's where the Ramban says no. Then you have an obligation to see to remove that disrespect, and that's what the Torah is trying to say. So here we have an interesting distinction, and this is obviously going to be a very relevant distinction, right? Another just saying, you don't have an obligation to do the burial, but you can't do something to disrespect the body of a non-Jew.
Meaning and leave it like that.
Yeah.
He was allowed to start the disrespect, but he had to
invent right, it. And right, and he had to fix it. So,
Yes,
the Ramban speaks that out. I did skip that part, but the Ramban does speak that out. It's in Chosaris as well. So, just another source, there's a pasuk in Amos. I saw a sefer quote this. Amos is in Treyaser, one of the Nevi'im, and he says, Koyamer Hashem, Al Shloisha Pishe Moyev, there are three sins that the nation of Moab did, Baal Arba, they did a fourth one, Loyashivan, that one I didn't forgive them for. What was the fourth one? Al Srafoy Atzmois Melech Edom Lasid. They captured the king of Edom, and they killed him, and then they burnt his bones and made it into mortar, like lime or something like that. So Rashi says, Al Srafoy Atzmois Pamachas Nafal Melech Edom Biad Melech Moab. The king of Edom fell in war into the hands of the king of Moab. They burnt his bones with tachum bekiras habayis, and they used it as plaster in the house. Right, that's the extreme humiliation. And that Kadosh Baruch Hu demanded a retribution from the nation of Moab because they humiliated the corpse of the king of Edom so much. So this is pretty extreme, right? So it seems like that you can't do to a non-Jew as well. But again, this is kind of what's done, right? Today it is done. Now you say, when would they ever do that, right? When do they melt down bodies? Well, it's done in the medical profession all the time, right? They do that with cadavers. If you want to study the bones of a corpse, and when they want to study skeletons, how do they get the flesh off so nicely and neatly? They melt it down and pour it down the drain.
I'll tell you something worse.
Yeah. I figured you could. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
One of the new types of products that's sold is cremated remains that they fuse together into like little figurines, like little animal figurines,
right.
Whatever it is.
So there you go.
Or charms, or bracelet charms, or your necklace.
Wow, they actually wear it.
They press it.
Wow, yeah. That's a madriga. Wow. Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
that
they
is
press
one
it. The heat. Pressure, whatever. Yeah. You would never know what it is, but that's that they say this. Now grandma's with me wherever I go.
Does that create a tuma?
What? No. Once it's burned, there's no tuma. But it's not different than this. Now, what's fascinating about this is that, see, this is really these questions are not only relevant for the profession of, as we're saying, it's for a funeral director, but it's really very relevant in the medical profession. I remember. when my sister-in-law was studying occupational therapy, and they had to, you know, they had a class of anatomy where they dealt with parts of cadavers, people who had donated their body for furthering education. And she was describing it to me. She said, you like had like a leg on the table, and then you dissected it, and then you threw it in the garbage. I mean, it was a bin, you know, and then whatever they disposed of, however they disposed of it, they disposed of it. But she said it was like people were just throwing body parts around. It was extreme humiliation of the corpse. But even doing that to a corpse is extreme humiliation. Forget about what you do with it after. Even just cutting it up is very humiliating, halachically speaking. But for them, the person who donated the body, it was the biggest honor, right, that their body is going to further medical profession. And it's not like wrong, so to speak, if you're not coming from a Torah perspective. It's not wrong. It's actually you're sacrificing yourself, so to speak, for the sake of education. Now, the Noda Bihuda, that long ago, was asked about it, right? So Noda Bihuda was in the 1700s, so they already started, apparently, the scientific method in the 1700s. I thought they were still guessing about, you know, there's air in the veins or blood in the veins, but apparently not. So in the 1700s, they were still, he was written this question from London, right? The Noda Bihuda was in Prague, and he said that in the hospital in London, they're taking bodies, they're boiling off the flesh, and they're studying the skeleton. That was one thing. Or maybe I may have confused two tshuvas. That was one tshuva, either in Noda Bihuda or somewhere else. And the other one, which is pretty funny, was that they were operating on people who had kidney stones. And they would cut open and try to remove the kidney stone. And unsurprisingly, the person died very often in that. You think, just leave him alone, right? Let him suffer, it'll pass. But maybe it doesn't always. So they would cut him up and remove the kidney stone. So the person died. Now they wanted to know, can they now fully dissect him to understand what they did wrong, and maybe the next guy won't die, right? So it's because nefesh. No, I mean, it's a serious thing. It's a real deal. So that was his question. Would that be permitted to do? So he does not allow it. He doesn't consider it pikuach nefesh, first of all. He says because you don't have any person dying right in front of you. It's just a possibility of pikuach nefesh, and we don't consider that pikuach nefesh. And also, he says, pikuach nefesh does not allow you to even pikuach nefesh wouldn't allow you to do this. It wouldn't allow you to be menavel the mace. It wouldn't allow you to disrespect the dead person. He says it's like stealing. You're not allowed to steal for the sake of pikuach nefesh. Now, that's not exactly correct. In other words, you are allowed to steal, you just can't, you have to pay back. Yeah, you do. If you need to break into someone's house to protect yourself from a guy who's chasing after you, you can. You're just going to have to pay for it. You're not going to be putter from the fact that you did it. But he just says it like that you can't steal. It's stealing. He says different, interesting things. And he prohibits it. So he prohibits any kind. Now, he doesn't clarify if he's talking about Jews or non-Jews. It's left ambiguous. Maybe it was intentional. I don't know. It's left ambiguous. So he could be just talking about Jews. The person who asked him was a Jew. Maybe they were talking about Jews. So I don't know. It's a little ambiguous. So he's not so clear. But that would be the question. Well,
someone donated their organs at that point.
It's the same thing. You know, that would be the...
So is that Geneva anymore, though?
What? No. It wouldn't be up to you, the Geneva here. The Geneva is not... He says the Geneva is actually from the earth. Huh. The earth is entitled to a person's body. He quotes a Medrash. Wow. Yeah. You're stealing Mother Nature, who's being robbed
over
here.
Very woke.
It's very interesting, what should I tell you? It's a very interesting concept. No, you're not stealing from the person. Though it seems, though, I see that Chassam Sofer, when he writes about it, he also writes about it. He's very, very against it. He mentions that there is that kind of distinction, that a person, he says, for sure, if a person doesn't, like, donate his body, then for sure not, but even if a person does. So it seems like there you do have some control over that, which the Gemara also implies that a person does have some control over what should happen to his body after he dies. It's just we may not listen to him, but there is some reason to think that he should have control. Now, the most fascinating thing to me, which is you may consider the most shocking, is we skip ahead here to Ches. It's a Gemara in Bechiris. I found this Gemara shocking, you will also, but besides that it's shocking, this actually is perhaps the earliest demonstration of the scientific method known to man. Take a look at this. Amar Rav Yehuda, the Gemara in Bukhari, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Maise b'tamidim shor Rabbi Yishmal. There was a story with the Tamidim of Rabbi Yishmal. Shashalku zayna achas. They took the dead body of a zayna, right, a prostitute, and they cooked it. Shenizchai v'sreifel amelch. She anyway had been decreed to death by the king, so she was dying anyway, or she was dead. And they boiled the body, and Badkuv Matsuba Masayim Chamisha Mishmaya. They found she has 252 organs, limbs. So this was a question, right? How many limbs does a person have? The Gemara famously says the person has 248. So, and if you ever learned, it's like kind of hard to figure out how it's 248. And they actually went and tested it out. I always wondered, the scientific method is like so simple. Why didn't they think of it in a long time? Just try it, like see if it works. You know, test it out. So they actually did. They actually, they took the body and they desecrated it in this terrible way. They boiled off the flesh, and they made the check, and they discovered that it had more. So the Gemara then has to try to figure it out. It was a woman, and that's why she had more. Whatever. The Gemara goes on to discuss why or not she had more. So how could they do that, right? So you could say maybe it was a non-Jew, right? Or you could say she was an Avera, she had sinned against the king, and she... So there could all kinds of explanations, but the bottom line is, it's a tremendous humiliation of a dead body. So it seems that there is... It doesn't apply if the person is not Jewish, the Isser does not seem to apply. And I don't know how we're going to answer this story in Amos. Maybe there was extra humiliation there, the fact that they used it for his house. Maybe it was like a beyond the pale of humiliation. But otherwise, it would be allowed. And look, the bottom line is, that is what we rely on. All our doctors, all Jewish doctors, from Jewish doctors, are relying on that. If they would not dissect a corpse, they would not pass medical school, and the truth is, you probably wouldn't want them operating on you if they hadn't done that, right? So it is very much what we do rely on, that it should be allowed.
Was Ilona a
Jewish? Well, no, the assumption is she was not. Not clear. Doesn't say clearly one way or another, but the assumption is she was not. So now, what are we left with over here? So we have a Gemara in Gittin that seems to definitely say there's no obligation to bury a non-Jew. You do it, just not to differentiate, but there's no standalone obligation. We have Ramban that does seem to say you're not allowed to desecrate the body of a non-Jew. And then we have other Gemaras that do seem to say that it is okay. Again, with the agreement, or even in our case, that's the desire of the person who's passed away, is that you should desecrate it in that way. So in summary, what will turn out is like this. So if... let's start with cremation. So if a non-Jew requests cremation, so it would seem, according to simple reading what we read, it would seem like you're not allowed to do it. You can't be the person who pushes the button, because that's desecrating the body. But according to these other Gemaras, and according to what is pretty much common practice today, like I said, that we do use bodies for the sake of the medical profession, so apparently we hold that we're not concerned about desecrating as long as the person wants that, so then you would be allowed to. And that's, I think, the assumed halacha, that you would be allowed to do whatever they want. Again, if it's a non-Jew, you're allowed to do whatever they want.
Desecration doesn't just mean it's going to be rotting and it be open and on display. The cremation is not like that. Cremation is not...
Right. But that's just a desecration, because it's like they did to this Melech Edom. They burnt him, right? And it seems like that
is... They took the ashes and put it in the wall.
Right. So that may be. Right. So that brings us to this last source here that we'll take a look here. It's an interesting one going to run. Well...
Is there a difference if you were doing it for medical purposes versus
it's discussed if, let's say, you're doing it not for medical purposes. What if you're doing it for just to make money? Like, let's say you were a pharmaceutical business or something. You're not doing it for noble reasons. You're doing it because you want to make a product, So that's discussed, whether that's worse. So there is a possibility that that's worse. Take a look at this Magen Avraham. This is the also very unusual Magen Avraham. And this is what I mentioned before. Magen Avraham is Zayin. So the halacha there is talking about a meish shemutal. Someone died, unfortunately, on Shabbos, and now you're worried that the house that he's in is caught fire, and he might get burnt. So meish kikar etinik v'tatla yadim. So he's mukta. That's the problem, right? So the mechaber goes through different ways you can move him. You can put a piece of bread on him and move him, and lay lazeb lazeb. But if you don't have any options, v'tatla tiltul gamer. You can even just move him himself, just so he shouldn't get burned. V'chol zeb ba'is rishus, as long as you don't carry him out into rishus rabbin. So Magen Avraham says ba'is rishus. Zek kasev harab beis yosef. The beis yosef says this midi kasev haramba menaflat leika b'chaser sheish be'meis. If the fire fell in a place where the mace is, mashma. You're not allowed to take him out and be machal Shabbos by carrying him from shus to shus. Why? It's not humiliating to the dead body when it gets burnt up. So that's what the Magen Avraham says. So all the Achrayim over here, Al Yiraba and others, Taisa Shavas, say, what are you talking about? Of course it's a desecration for a dead body to get burnt up. It's a tremendous desecration. So what others want to say is that it's desecrating a dead body to burn up the dead body and then not to bury it. But essentially, possibly burning up a dead body is just hastening the process of decomposition. And decomposition is actually considered a good thing for a dead body. When the body gets fully decomposed, and then it's the neshama can get its aliyah or whatever it is. So obviously we are not allowed to put it through that process, because putting the base through that process is delaying kvura or whatever it is. But ultimately, he says, it's not essentially a bezayin, because it's just speeding up the decomposition process. That's how someone wants to save shot. That's why I was saying before that if a family says we are not burying the dead person, you know, and they want to figure out cremation, so once it's already a done deal that he's not getting buried, then cremating him might actually be a kindness. Like according to this Magen Avraham, for him to sit around unburied is a bigger design for the maze.
They say people bury the ashes sometimes.
What?
Yeah, but
if they will, yeah.
But even before you get to that, the only reason they're not burying is because they're cremating. Because
they have the option of cremation.
Correct. So in other words, they would bury if they didn't cremate.
Right, I understand that. But here, that's where it is, like, you don't want to cremate him, they'll find someone else to cremate him. But burial will not happen. That's already a foregone conclusion. But I'm not even saying with the svara of Trey Eber Denari, I'm not getting into Lufna either. All I'm saying is that there is no way this body is getting buried. That you know for a fact. It's not getting buried. I'm paying for it, and they will just find the other option until they get it. So once that's a foregone conclusion, then it may be that...
So there is another process, the cremation, that I didn't mention before, that after it's burnt, they actually crush the bones and they grind the bones up into like dust as well.
Much like this, the Sid, yeah.
So it's
right.
That part...
Maybe a little bit more of a bazillion. Unless you say the same thing, it's also just hastening the decomposition process. Anyway, I just wanted to make that point. It's an interesting point in terms of this.
Just say, go have someone else do it, but I'm like, you shouldn't be the one to do it.
Well, that's the question. Can you do it? Or can you be involved? He's the person that's sitting down. He's the person in this funeral home who deals with it, right? So I don't have a choice. You have
to
send him to a different funeral home, basically. You know?
Lemaiser Heinemann said it was mutter to be face-to-face with the families. Whatever svar he used, I'm not sure.
Right.
But
he did allow it. Okay,
yeah,
good
he says, not leave Navy because I'm not actually doing anything.
Okay, and they other svaras. Right.
You know, there's a lot of a few.
Right. Wow. All right, shabbat, everybody. Yeah.